So this is the last lecture then in the series Social and Ethnic Identities and Conflicts in Britain. And today I want to look at the history of gay identities and conflicts. And the first very surprising thing about this subject is the very rapid change over the last 30 years. When I was your age, if somebody told me a Conservative government in 2012 will introduce marriage for homosexual people, everybody in the room would have think, what a completely impossible idea. It's absolutely unimaginable. So not just a government, but a Conservative government introduced in Britain last year the right for people to marry anybody they want, whether they are of the same sex or of a different one. So an enormous change. Now, of course, even today in England, if you are gay, there are people who have prejudices, stereotypes, caricatures, etc. But the change has been absolutely amazing, really, very, very surprising. Even my mother, who is the most conservative person in the entire universe, is now kind of okay about gay people. So if my mother is there, you know, this is really the big change that has come. Sorry, mother. Okay, so let's go right back into history. Oh, now one more thing. One of the reasons for the change is that the acceptance of gay people is not just a question of minorities. It's part of a general trend, which is to reduce the strict division between men and women and what are acceptable activities. Because when gay men are rejected, this means every man must be very careful about their activities. When I was a teenager, if you played the violin, you were probably homosexual. Everybody thought you were probably homosexual if you played the violin. I don't see the connection. But many, many activities which were considered feminine, if you liked ballet dancing, you were probably homosexual. This was the attitude. And so a million things you couldn't do because everybody would think. If you liked poetry, if you like this, there's very, very strict rules about what men should do and what women should do. And so one of the results of the relative increase in the acceptance of gay people has been that men and women have more choice. So I can wear a light green jumper. In 50 years ago, it was impossible to wear colours because, you're probably gay if you wear colours. So very, very, very strict. Everybody wore grey. Okay, so let's go back into history because, in fact, the idea of gay people was invented in the 19th century. Now, there has always been sexual activity between people of the same sex, always. But in the 19th century, the attitudes changed. Before the 19th century, everybody thought that homosexual activity was a terrible sin against God, but something which everybody might do. In the 19th century, for the first time, you have the idea that homosexual people are a separate category, and that's how it works. So this was an invention of the 19th century, the idea that there are gay people and non-gay people. Before that, all of the attitudes were about activities. So, for example, in 1533, male homosexual activity, was a very serious crime, and you could be executed for this. So the first man to be convicted was a playwright called Nicholas Udall in 1541, and he was not executed. Many people were not executed, but it was possible to be executed for homosexual activity. Yeah, even if you were married and straight, that didn't matter. The problem was the activity. However, The situation was much easier for women because there has never been in Britain a law against sexual activity between women. We don't know why this is. I think it's because the Parliament was all men and they couldn't imagine this kind of activity. Next slide, please. So the law became permanent in 1563, and this was replaced in 1828 by the Offences Against the People Act. So notice the title, you have the Offences Against the People Act, the Crime contre le Peuple, activity homosexuelle, Crime contre le Peuple, okay, it's a particular way of looking at the world. And the death penalty was possible until 1861, although it was little used. And after 1861, there was a reform, and the punishment for homosexual activity was imprisonment for between 10 years and life. This homosexual activity between men remained illegal until the 1960s. And this is a big problem for historians, because when an activity is illegal, it's very difficult to find information. Because nobody was writing it down. Oh, let me write it down. There's very little information, very few documents. And so we have some problems in connection with that. One of the first big scandals of modern Britain, of contemporary Britain, was at the end of the 19th century. The 1885 Criminal Law Amendment Act made any homosexual activity illegal, and the most famous case in front of a tribunal was Oscar Wilde. In 1895, Oscar Wilde was prosecuted for homosexuality and sentenced to 2 years in prison with hard labour. Donc deux ans de travaux forcés qu'il a fait. Okay, so that was this was the first time that all of the newspapers talked about this question. It was a big national debate. And here you have the picture at the time. This is the Police News. This was a very popular newspaper because everybody liked to see the stories of murder and danger and violence. It was just like today, really. Notice that they have drawings and not photographs. First of all, photographs are very expensive. And secondly, if you want to photograph people, you have to say, please don't move for 3 minutes while I photograph you. So of course, in a courtroom scene, it's impossible. So you have a drawing here of Oscar Wilde at the Old Bailey, the High Court, the Criminal Court in Britain. And at the bottom, you can see the sale of Oscar Wilde's effects, la vente aux enchères des meubles de Oscar Wilde, because he had to pay a lot of money for the lawyer. And he had to. They had to sell what he owned. His wife, because he was married, many gay men were married at this time because it was socially very, very difficult. If you were not married, if you were part of the elite, especially. His wife moved to France and changed her name, and he spent 2 years. In prison. When he was in prison, he wrote a very famous poem, The Ballad of Reading Jail, La Ballade de la Prison de Reading. Okay, so for the first time then, this case made a national debate. And quite a lot of people, a minority, but a significant minority, defended Oscar Wilde. In particular, the socialist organisations and the Marxist organisations, they defended Oscar Wilde. They said, it's not a public problem, it's a private question for him. Yeah. Now, in general, they didn't say, it's okay to be gay. That was too difficult for people. But they said, it's not a public problem. Next slide, please. So there he is, Oscar Wilde in his style as a late 19th century dandy. He is famous for his plays. Ce sont ses pièces qui sont connues. Quelqu'un connaît une de ses pièces ou un des films basés sur ça?
That's right, yeah,
absolutely, yeah. Lady Windermere's Fan and The Importance of Being Earnest. Surtout, il était connu pour les petits dictons, du genre... a relative is somebody who has no idea how to live or when to die. Yeah, un parent, c'est quelqu'un qui ne sait absolument pas comment il faut vivre ni quand il faut mourir. Okay, so little things like that. Yeah, so if your mother dies, you get money, you see, that's the idea. Il a dit aussi, oui, c'est, there is only one thing worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. Yeah, la seule chose qui est pire que quand tout le monde parle de vous, c'est quand personne ne parle de vous. Okay, bon, c'est très 19th century. Next slide, please. And this I wanted to show you because this is a statue of Oscar Wilde. If you have a statue, then obviously you are recognized as having made a valuable contribution to society. And Oscar Wilde has a statue because he wrote plays, quite funny plays, that people appreciate. And this is in Dublin, in Ireland, because he was Irish. But I'm sure you remember, when he was alive, Ireland was still part of the United Kingdom. What's most interesting about this statue, can you imagine when they put this statue in? Yeah?
It's a modern statue.
It's a modern statue. How do you know it's a modern statue? Yeah, il y a pas de socle, il y a pas de piédestal, tout à fait. Look at the colours, yeah? The colours, yeah? You know the classic 19th century statue, Balzac, etc. in Paris? You don't have colour. And also, the position, yeah? He's lying. He's lying down. This is a very modern statue. I think it's 10 or 15 years old. So it's a very recent statue. That is to say that in... I can't remember when... Oscar Wilde died a long time ago, and certainly in the 1930s and the 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s, Dublin did not want a statue of Oscar Wilde because they did not want a statue of a gay man. So that was it made it impossible. And it's recently that you have then this statue. One of his famous short stories, The Portrait of Dorian Gray, was made into a film recently. This is the story of a man who, like me, never grows old and always appears young. However, he has in his attic a painting of a person, and the painting gets older and older and older. And so the person, the man, can drink and smoke and do all sorts of things and never look old. And until, of course, one day, I can't remember, I think he destroys the painting and he becomes very old very quickly. So quite an amusing piece there. Right, okay. The Ballad of Ready Jail. The Importance of Being Earnest. Now, the problem with this play, this is probably his most famous play, and the problem with it is it is a play on words. The Importance of Being Earnest. Et on traduit l'importance d'être constant, parce que constant, c'était également peut-être un prénom, peut-être un adjectif, comme earnest is an adjective meaning honest, and also a person's name. And Lady Windermere's Femme, L'Éventail de la Dame, de Lady Windermere. So you can see in these two cases, that's a book, but these two are DVDs because they have been made into films with the text. And it's very knockabout, you know. Somebody who sees somebody's wife and thinks it's somebody else's wife. You know, it's that sort of thing. Okay, so let's leave Oscar Wilde Although I think it's important to underline how very deep the prejudice was at the time. I remember seeing an autobiography, and this is in the 1930s, and there was a teenager reading a book by Oscar Wilde, and his father didn't discuss it. His father just beat him and refused to discuss it, but just beat him because he was reading a book by Oscar Wilde, not about homosexuality, just a book. There was a tremendously deep feeling, and there was another man, this is in the 1930s again, who said, "I would prefer to kill my child rather than have them be gay." Yeah, so there's a really very, very strong feelings about this. This is another, what you can see on the board, a dictionary of Polari, Fantabuloso. This is a book, it's a dictionary, and it's a dictionary of Polari and gay slang, because in the 1920s, the 1930s, the 1940s, the 1950s, the 1960s, it was necessary for gay men in particular to be secret, and so they had a special language, special vocabulary, like criminals, and algu, and this is called Polari. And this allowed, in special cafes, special gay cafes, it allowed people to discuss without the police understanding. Without the police understanding, that's Polari. Now, Polari has declined because today, of course, it's not necessary in the same way to have secret. And the gay cafes, which were secret, they were not officially gay cafes. That was impossible. It was illegal. But the gay cafes had special codes. For example, certain kinds of shoes meant, you know, that you were gay, and other such and other such things. So let's go back to the question of the history, and one of the important episodes of gay history happened in Germany, and that is that from 1900 until 1925, this gentleman, Magnus Hirschfeld, was the leader of an organization which defended gay men in particular. And here is his book. It's a German book. There was very, very little in English because, of course, most people did not want to write anything about this illegal and allegedly immoral activity. So this is a book called Was muss das Volk von dritten Geschlecht wissen? Yes, can anybody help? Ce qu'on doit savoir sur le troisième sexe. And so, le troisième sexe, c'est les homos. C'est comme ça qu'il le voyait à l'époque. So this was a very influential book, which was supported by the Socialists of Germany at the time, the Sozialistische Partei, Demokratische Partei. And what's interesting about it is the ideas inside, because the idea of the book was not to say that homosexuality is good. It was to say that homosexuality is natural. It's terrible, but people do not have the choice. It's a natural thing. It's genetic. Now, today we know that homosexuality is not genetic. But at the time, they had the impression that if they defended the idea that it's genetic, then people would treat gay people a little better. It felt like a good idea at the time. So remember, at this time they didn't have the word gay. They didn't use the word gay. So they used this expression, the third sex, dritten Geschlecht. And Magnus Hirschfeld was convinced that the differences were biological, and so he interviewed and examined. He was a doctor. He examined thousands of homosexuals to try to show what was biologically different. Now, of course, there wasn't anything, but he was trying to do this, and this was fairly well accepted at the time. let's say, in the minority of socialists and left-wing people, there was some support for this. And they tried to get the abolition of the German law against homosexual activity, and they managed to get quite a lot of signatures. So, although we're looking at the history of gays in Britain, we're obliged to look at the international situation, because this was the big steps happened in other countries. So this book, I think, was 1910. Next slide, please. There he is, Magnus Hirschfeld. Next slide again, please. Yes, okay. Now, before I talk about this gentleman, the next big moment, in fact, came in Russia. When the Russian Revolution happened in 1917, they passed a new law saying that homosexual couples and heterosexual couples have the same rights. So for the first time in the world, in Russia in 1918, there was the first law saying that it was possible to abolish, which abolished all the old laws about homosexuality. In fact, the Russian Revolution abolished the old laws about divorce, abolished the old laws about contraception, abortion, and also the laws about homosexuals. So this lasted for the whole of the 1920s. In 1929, Stalin takes over in Russia, which is something. So in 1933, homosexuality is again illegal in Russia. So for 15 years, approximately 15 years in Russia, the only country in the world, homosexuality had the same status as heterosexuality. And in 1933, the Stalinist government made homosexuality illegal, also abortion illegal, and went back to an old way of doing things. Now, there are many arguments about why the Russian Revolution made these big changes and then Stalin changed them back again. There are 100 books about this. But it seems that the society in the 1930s, that Stalin was no longer trying to have an equal society, but he was trying to have an industrial revolution to compete with the West. So that's the short version. So, back in Britain in the 1920s, we only know a little bit about homosexual men and women in the 1920s. We don't have a lot of information. However, we have some information about the theatre, because in the theatre it was acceptable to be homosexual if you didn't mention it. So everybody knew that Noel Coward was homosexual, but you mustn't talk about it, and that remained the case for quite a long time. So he had to be very careful. He was a very successful actor, playwright, some of the biggest plays of the 1920s, Noel Coward, very funny plays, very good. Ones about ghosts and comic, light stuff, very good stuff. And also he wrote songs. But he did have to be discreet. So for example, he wrote a love song, Mad About the Boy, Fou d'un Garçon, and it was impossible to have it sung by a man. He was obliged to have a woman to sing it. Yes, you had to be very, very careful. Yes, sir. It's been used recently as a title, yes. Mad About the Boy, that's Noel Carroll. There were quite a lot of plays about homosexuality. Remember, in the 1920s, cinema is still silent, Charlie Chaplin, etc. And so very often the more political productions were plays, theatre plays. Theatre plays, today many people don't go to the theatre. In the 1920s, it was a much bigger thing, the theatre, much bigger, because the cinema was only silence. And we know that in 1925, an actor played in a play called Spring Clean, Le Nettoyage du Printemps, and his character was homosexual. So he was playing the character of a homosexual. And he himself was homosexual, but of course that had to be a secret. And when he was interviewed in the press, and he had to keep it a secret, and finally he committed suicide because the tension was too much. And this is something, one of the very, very sad parts of gay history is that the level of suicide was very, very high in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, even in the 70s. It was a very high level of suicide. Even today, levels of suicide are higher among gay young people. But it's much, much better than in the 70s, because the problem of being secrets is that the psychological pressure is enormous. You know, to just be being secret, you know, so difficult to be secrets. So there you have Noel Coward. Next slide, please. So here is a centenary celebration featuring the best love songs of Noel Coward, just to show you that today, of course, he is completely accepted. Now he's dead, yeah? But he's completely accepted. Let's have a look at the situation for women in the 1920s in Britain, for gay women. Now, of course, in some ways, the situation was a little easier, because two women living together was not shocking. You know, people didn't imagine they were lesbians, but two men living together was kind of shocking. Two women living together was not shocking because people didn't see it in the same way. In 1921, the House of Commons voted a law against lesbian activity. The House of Commons, la Chambre des Communes, a voté une loi contre l'activité lesbienne en 21. But as you know, in Britain, every law must go first of all to the House of Commons and then to the House of Lords. And this law did not pass the House of Lords. And one of the reasons is that one of the Lords said, if you vote for this law, you will tell the entire world that such a crime exists. You will encourage women who have never thought of this. Yeah, so they were really frightened. Ils avaient peur d'en parler au cas où ça faisait tache d'huile. So in this time in Europe, in Berlin with Marlene Dietrich, and in Paris with Gertrude Stein, there was a small community of gay women from the intellectual elites. We know almost nothing about working class lesbians because they don't write books, you know, so we don't know. So we know about the literary elites and around Marlene Dietrich, the great singer. Yeah. Ich bin vom Kopf zu Fuß aus Liebe eingesetzt, something like that. But going back to Britain, there was a big scandal at the end of the 1920s, which we will see on the next slide. This book, The Well of Loneliness, Le Puits de la Solitude, was written by quite a well-known novelist, and it was published in the end of the 1920s. Je n'ai pas la date exacte là, si c'est 28 ou 27, mais c'est pas grave. Là, on va dire la fin des années 20. And this is a story about two women who fall in love. Initially, it was refused by several publishers, and finally it was published in 1928. Now, in the first few weeks, it was very popular. W.H. Smith, the big bookshop, had a big pile in the window, and it sold a lot. But after 3 weeks, there was a big campaign launched by the conservative press to ban les interdictions des livres étaient beaucoup plus courants à l'époque, donc il y avait une campagne pour interdire ce livre. There was a big debate, And quite a few authors, even though they didn't think it was a very good novel, defended Radcliffe Hall. So, for example, Virginia Woolf, Arnold Bennett, E.M. Forster, they all defended her. They said, no, we must not ban this book. It's a book. But many more of her friends who were writers, they didn't say anything. She tells in her memoirs how she talked to her friends, and her friends said, no, I don't want to say anything. Yeah, they were hiding under the table. Yeah. That's because they didn't want to be. Yeah, that's how it works. Unfortunately, there's always people like that. So there was a big trial in the London courts. There was a big trial, and many people came to give their opinion. It was in the newspapers every day. You had authors, you know, what do you think, and so on. And finally, and interestingly enough, Radcliffe Hall received thousands of letters of support, but the judge decided that the novel should be banned. So the novel was banned. Now, it's interesting because, in fact, the novel was... It's not a very good novel. It's extremely romantic. And there is, if you can read it if you want, there is no sex in this book, okay? There is, don't read it for the sex, there's no sex. In fact, there is one sentence, ce soir là, elles ne se sont pas séparées. That is the most pornographic sentence in the book, yeah? So, you know, if you want sex, this is not the right place. So, that's right. But, of course, because it was understood what they were talking about, it was banned. Now, the interesting thing about Radcliffe Hall is, so obviously she was defending lesbians, but again, from a very defensive point of view, what is the story of the book is that being a lesbian is terrible, but people have no choice, so we should accept them. And so it's a very, very minimalist. It's not at all a gay liberation book at all. And also Radcliffe Hall was not a radical. She was a rich conservative. Yeah, which can happen to people as well. Next, please. Let's move on to the 1930s and the 1950s. And again, one of our difficulties is we don't have so much information, and this gentleman, Quentin Crisp, wrote a book about being homosexual in London in the 1950s and the 1960s. And the title of the book is The Naked Civil Servant, Le Fonctionnaire Tout Nu. And it's a very, very, very interesting and moving book about being gay in London in the 1950s and 60s. Now, the Second World War, to go back to the 1940s, the Second World War made a big difference to people's lives. Traditional strict morality was not possible in wartime. Suddenly, all the soldiers were away. All the women, many millions of women were in the factories, and so on. And also, when life is dangerous, people are not so moralistic. And when you're watching people die, you don't feel quite so moralistic. There was a lot of difficulty for gay men in the army, because when they wrote letters to their partner, they had to be very, very careful what they wrote, because of course letters in the army during the wartime are censored, of course, and so they had to write in code and so on. That was very, very, very difficult. The American army was particularly strict. The American army said, "We don't want any homosexuals in the army." And so some pacifists who were not homosexuals pretended to be homosexuals, so they didn't have to join the army. And the army had this terrible job where they had to try to decide who is really a homosexual. And so the doctors invented all sorts of methods to find out who is really a homosexual. And for example, they imagined that there was a difference on the tongue. That if you stick a needle here, the reaction is different for homosexual. This is not true. This is just what they thought at the time. And during the war, between 3,000 and 4,000 soldiers were excluded from the American army because of their homosexuality. In Britain, Quentin Crisp, he wanted to join the army, but they refused to allow him to join the army because he was wearing lipstick and jewellery. So he went to the recruiting office with his lipstick and jewellery, and he tells the story. It's very funny. During the war in the British Army, there were a lot of cases of tribunal cases for the crime of being of being homosexual in the army. Now, unfortunately for the historians, all of the documents from the tribunals about homosexuality in the Second World War, all the documents have disappeared. We don't know why, but this is one of the... as historians, we don't like it when people destroy documents. That's what we really hate. Now, the situation was different for lesbians. Because in the Second World War, there were more possibilities for women to do different jobs, the situation was more easy for the women. And in particular, some famous lesbians became war journalists, des journalistes de guerre. There are some famous women journalists who became, for example, the first woman journalist, no, the first journalist to visit Hitler's private house in 1945 was a lesbian. The other famous character from the Second World War who was gay is Alan Turing. Now, on the third floor in the other building here, nous avons une salle informatique nommée la salle Alan Turing ici à Crédit. Yeah, Alan Turing is famous because he worked on the codes during the Second World War, the German code. Yeah, he was a code breaker. I don't know how much you know about the Second World War, but breaking codes is very important. Yeah, donc il cassait les codes de la Luftwaffe, which was, of course, very, very important work. However, he had a terrible time after the war because he was arrested after the war for being a homosexual. And the tribunal said to him, you can choose, you can go to prison, or you can take these drugs to make you better. So des hormones très fortes, which is, on appelle ça un peu la castration chimique. And he accepted to take the drugs, and he committed suicide. So it's a very, very tragic story. The British government apologized to his family 5 years ago, just 5 years ago. Yeah. Now, that's an important story because it's famous, but of course, Alan Turing was treated very badly, committed suicide, but there were thousands of others. This is just a symbol. So the apology of the British government to Alan Turing was a symbol for many, many other people. Of course, during the war, life was extremely difficult for gay people because, especially in Europe, because for Hitler, for Hitler's plans for massacres, in order it was first the communists, then the Jews, the gays, the disabled, the gypsies. Yeah? So being gay was no fun. And here is the concentration camp uniform with the pink triangle. And the pink triangle is the symbol of being gay, just as the yellow star was the symbol of being Jewish. Yeah, so what Victor Serge called Midnight in the Century, Minuit dans le siècle, was also involving gay people. Next slide, please. One of the difficulties in Britain and in France after the war is that very slowly recognition of the Jewish people and then the gypsies who were massacred rose, very slowly. But for a very long time, nobody wanted to talk about homosexuals who were massacred. And this is a report in France, but also in Britain there were similar things. Next slide, please. Okay, so we're now after the Second World War. We're into the Trente Glorieuse. One of the priorities of the elites immediately after the war was to reconstruct traditional morality. And in Britain, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of the Church of England, said just after the war, we must reject wartime morality. Il faut qu'on rejette la moralité du temps de guerre. That is to say, they wanted women not to be working in factories so much, not to be driving buses and doing all these non-feminine things. And of course, they wanted to make sure that there was no public homosexuality. At this time in the 1950s, it was still the case, it was very difficult not to be married. So probably the majority of homosexuals were married, because it was the only way to survive. This is the very traditional communities where you live in a house and your mother lives in this house and your brother lives in this house. Yeah, it's very difficult to have a secret life. Yeah. Today, people are all over the world. You know, my auntie has one daughter in Saudi Arabia and another daughter in Australia, and they're just ordinary people, yeah? Whereas at the time it was much more. Now, in 1948, from America, came the next big event, and it's a book. It's simply a book, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, by three people, but the famous one is Kinsey, and it's sometimes called the Kinsey Report. And this is, for the first time, a scientific approach to human sexuality. So they interviewed thousands of people. Tell me about your sex life. Have you ever done this? Have you ever done this? Have you ever done this? Yeah. For the first time, because in the 1930s or the 19th century, nobody wanted to have a scientific view. They only wanted to have a moral view. So for the first time, they had this one. And they discovered that for American men, but of course everybody understood that it's probably the same for British men, for American men, 37% had at least one homosexual experience. And 4% had only had sexual experience with men. Yeah, so that was there. And this was tremendously shocking at the time. And this was tremendously shocking at the time because most people were convinced that you could tell a homosexual at a distance. You look at them and say, oh yes, no, yes, no. It was visible. People believed it was completely visible. So this made an enormous debate. And 2 years later, this is 1948, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male. Look at the title, Le comportement sexuel chez le mâle humain. So it's a title like a zoologist, yeah? The kind of book that you will have about monkeys or tigers or so on. And 5 years later, the same team wrote Sexual Behavior in the Human Female. So nothing surprising there. Next slide, please. In one town in the north of England, there was a tribunal who wanted to ban this book as obscene. Donc il y a eu une tentative de le faire interdire pour obscénité. Okay. But it was not successful. So probably there are some there had been already some changes. Okay, we're going to take exactly 5 minutes break, and then I will continue.